let me introduce you to our debaters today. Our first debater placed third in the March 2022 edition. He was the first wild card entry into the Tournament of Champions. He qualified as the undefeated winner of Group B with two wins. Ramadan Oladikupo Olalekan, welcome. Good to see you today. Ramadan says he hasn't gotten a lot of sleep and he's not feeling very well. So prayers up for Ramadan. And Lagos, let me remind you, you can watch this live on Facebook. Facebook is Nigeria Info 99.3. YouTube, Nigeria Info FM. Here is our second debater. Our second debater qualified as the undefeated winner of Group A with two wins. She is the champion from the November 2021 edition. Tanvita Kaushik, good to see you. Welcome to the Tournament of Champions.
It's lovely to be back.
Lagos, let me remind you again, you can watch live on Facebook, Nigeria Info 99.3, YouTube, Nigeria Info FM. The contestants have been told rules, but here they are again. I will give you a topic. One of you will be in support. One of you will oppose. You will each first get 3 minutes to present your positions. And then you'll each get another 3 minutes in the rebuttal round to address the point your opponent made. And finally, you'll get another 3 minutes for closing arguments. The clock is the clock. And once it starts, I will not pause until the 3 minutes are up. Our panel of judges will score all three rounds based on number, quality, and originality of unique points made. If you repeat a point, your score will not increase. Clarity of thought and eloquence of presentation, number of opponents' points addressed, the strength of your rebuttal of each point. All very important if you want to win. Lagos, these are the criteria by which the judges judge. Any other thing not on this list, the judges are not judging by that. Again, please pay attention. Number, quality, originality of unique points made. If a point is repeated, that score will not increase. Clarity of thought and eloquence of presentation. Number of opponents' points addressed. The strength of the rebuttal of a point. These are the criteria with which the judges will judge. We are now in the knockout stages, so if your scores are tied, there will be a tiebreaker round. You'll switch sides. You'll have 5 minutes to debate in favor of your opponent's position. You'll be scored for all new points that you make, which were missed by your opponent, and for new rebuttals to the points you made earlier. I'm curious what you guys thought about your topic. Religious leaders and institutions should stay out of politics. What did you think when you saw it, Ramadan?
It was better than my topic on ChatGPT.
It was better than ChatGPT.
Yeah,
you think so? Yeah. Okay. Oh, how about you? What did you think when you saw it?
I think I'm just happy to be debating a social issue. A lot of the topics that I've been getting are like political issues. So mm-hmm. This seems quite interesting to be debating.
Okay, so it's nice to change and do social for once. All right, let's decide who supports and who opposes. I've got a coin to decide this. It's got an actual head, an actual tail. We've got an actual head. An actual tale. Is this the day that Ramadan will have to support again? Because Ramadan is always opposing. Now, of course, Tanvita, you are the group winner. You're going to choose either heads or tails. If a coin lands on the one you choose, you will support the motion. If it lands on the other side, you will oppose the motion. Call it?
Heads.
Tails it is. All right. Okay. Which means Ramadan? Supporting the religious leaders and institutions should stay out of politics. And Tanvita opposing that religious leaders and institutions should stay out of politics. Have you ever opposed, Tanvita?
Not in this tournament.
No. Not in this tournament?
No, only back in November.
Okay. Was it at the final that you opposed?
Yeah, finals. If I didn't support in the first one, I had to oppose
in the second one. Okay, because I think you're always supporting. All right, Lagos, we'll take a break. When we come back from this break, it'll be time for round one, presentation round. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. This is Nigeria Info's I Beg to Differ debate tournament. Don't go away. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili, your moderator. Ramadan Olalekunpo Olalekan, you've got 3 minutes to tell us why you think religious leaders and institutions should stay out of politics. It starts now.
Religion has absolutely no business in the bedroom of politics. Moderator and adjudicators, good day. Follow me as I unveil the various reasons as to why religious leaders should indeed be a part of our politics. Firstly, while it's true that some religious leaders could potentially switch up politically, for the majority who do not, that reputation they have to protect as religious leaders. Firstly, religious beliefs could negatively influence the policy-making decisions of politicians. This has happened severally, but let's take the example of Mike Pence. His position as a religious leader was what pushed him to advocate for anti-same-sex marriage policies at the detriment of other religions. Secondly, religion and politics are two extremely jealous pursuits that both require uttermost devotion, meaning when religious leaders are involved in politics, they're sort of stuck up in that dilemma of serving two masters and will ultimately neglect one of them. An example is Chief Justice Roy Moore of Alabama, who continually defied federal court orders to uphold his religious beliefs. Thirdly, a lot of religious leaders could risk compromising their credibility if they unfortunately endorse a candidate who later promotes bad policies or later engages in unethical behavior. In addition, religious leaders and institutions who involve in politics could create the perception that the institution is biased, even if they have genuine intentions, because let's say they are promoting a candidate that they feel is very beneficial to the country, but then other people might see this as bias, and this is detrimental to the institutional reputation. In addition, religious leaders and institutions who evolve in politics might risk attack on rival on their religious communities by rivals, because politics is a dirty, sentimental, and emotional game. And this isn't just a speculation, as it has happened severally. But let's take what happened in Iran when the Shia and Sunni religious institutions decided to involve in politics. There were a series of attack on rival religious communities, endangering the lives of a lot of people. In addition, a lot of people see their religious leaders as second string mothers and fathers, and these figures need to be easily accessible. But in politics, presidents, for example, are most likely the most unaccessible people, and this could sadly become the case for our religious leaders who are involved in politics. And then for those who are already hard to access, it only makes it worse. In addition, by keeping religious leaders and institutions out of politics, we are preventing political aspirants from taking advantage of the control, respect, and influence that these people have accrued from their religious communities. In addition, let's say a very prominent religious leader is involved in politics and is indicted for corruption, for example. It could breed a basis for a bad representation of the entire religion, especially from their religious antagonists. Furthermore, religious leaders and institutions who involve in politics could cause a breakdown of trust, because as politicians, these religious leaders can't really trust as much, damaging the most fundamental basis for any healthy religious community. Furthermore, religious leaders and institutions have a responsibility to foster unity and harmony. However, political involvement could do quite the opposite. For example, campaigns could be very divisive, and that's the direct opposite of what our religious leaders want to be doing. In addition, religious leaders and institutions who involve in politics could be tempted to use that political influence to promote their religions, and this could slowly translate into religious hostility and then religious exclusion and full-blown extremism, like what was seen with the Taliban's rise in Afghanistan. Furthermore, religious leaders and institutions who involve in politics might end up Iran, Sudan, Somalia, Egypt. These are the most oppressed countries according to the Freedom Index. Meaning, and what do they all have in common? Their religious leaders are actively involved in their politics. So religious leaders who involve in politics might end up creating policies that are oppressive. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ramadan Oladipupo Olalekan. Well done. Great work. Okay. Let me remind you, Lagos, we're streaming live, Facebook, Nigeria Info 99.3, YouTube, Nigeria Info FM. Tamvita, your 3 minutes start now.
I'd like to start by stating that when we evaluate the pros and cons of something as sacred as religion, we're actually evaluating how its interpretations are manipulated in today's world. With all due respect to those involved with any religious organizations, good day, honorable judges, esteemed moderator, co-debates, and our lovely audience. My name is Sanvita Kaushik. I'm 15 years old, and I'm opposing the motion that states religious leaders and institutions should stay out of politics to begin with. Religious institutions can provide morals to balance out the cold logic of a government, which can lead to policies that incorporate more moral and ethical values. Consider China and atheist states. From secretly funding Russian weaponry to their blatant disregard of climate change to their inhumane labor laws, they constantly show a lack of ethics. Furthermore, we need to evaluate the benefits of soft power over hard power. In other words, the benefits of tradition, culture, and religion over economic sanctions, nuclear power, and military power. Religion is a powerful tool that can be used to exert soft power and create hegemonies. Countries all over the world are already doing this. Consider how Saudi Arabia strategically uses their position as the birthplace of Islam in order to promote its values and interests and assert itself as a world power. Additionally, culture and tradition and religion, these are all tools of diplomacy. They can create alliances, facilitate world trade, attract foreign investors, and improve the way a country is perceived worldwide. This This is seen when Japan constantly uses Buddhism and their cultures in order to impose that onto the rest of the world, which is why they are ranked the third largest economy as we speak. Fifthly, if religious leaders were involved in politics, they could be mobilized in order to engage with various terrorist organizations. Consider the Philippines, where the government accesses Mindanao religious leaders in order to engage with various militant organizations, which is why in 2014 there was a series of peace agreements signed between the two. Additionally, history has taught us there's only ever been increased religious and political tension whenever there are attempts to separate religion from politics, also known as the separation of the church from the state. France tried this in 1790, in 1882, in 1905, in 2004, and again last year, and it's only ever been counter-effective because it really just contributes to a lack of religious freedom, which is what we're trying to avoid. Furthermore, let's look at this from another perspective. Why should we reject our natural ways of involving religion with politics just because other Western countries tell us to do so? If we conform to these so-called international standards, we are willingly throwing away our national identity and cultures. Even within a nation, religious leaders and institutions can contribute to the political sphere. In terms of voter education, religious leaders can use their platform to educate those who lack knowledge and critical issues before an election. In terms of voter participation, religious institutions can come up with voter registration drives and transportation to polling units to ensure that most people go to vote. As well as all of these, it's also been found that there are higher patriotic sentiments in countries where the government works closely with the religious institutions. But don't just take my word for it. Israel and Brazil are two countries with extremely religious populations, which is why they have a correspondingly high voter turnout of 79% and 68% respectively. Additionally, several religious leaders can also handle global issues better than our current leaders do. Consider the Indian spiritualist leader Sadhguru Vasudev, who constantly comes up with different initiatives to combat climate change, which is an objective that has been shared by Pope Francis, the Imam Shikhar, and the Dalai Lama. Additionally, religious institutions are known for housing victims of homelessness, natural disasters, and displacement. So if they work with politics, that can actually help to address these issues better. Lastly, let's look at it from a moral standpoint. If we're just going to remove religious institutions from politics, then are we actually solving anything? Is that a viable solution? We're just undermining the fundamental role that religion plays in all of our lives. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tanvita Kaushik. Well done. And right on time. We'll take a break, Lagos. When we come back, it'll be time for rebuttals. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili, your moderator. This is Nigeria Info's Tournament of Champions for the I Beg to Differ debate tournament. This is semi-final one between Ramadan and Tanvita. Don't go away. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili, your moderator. We have done round one, the presentation round. It's now time for rebuttals. We'll start with the motion opposer, Tanvita Kaushik.
Thank you. All protocols being duly noted, I'm going to be addressing some of the attempted points that the opposition attempted to make. So firstly, you talked about policy making decisions and you gave Mike Pence as an example. And you said that because of his Christian faith, he tends to have very conservative mindsets on social issues such as anti-same-sex marriage and abortion. Well, are you aware that Mike Pence is a right-wing conservative leader? That is his political party. He has to stick to whatever that political party denominates. He was not a religious leader before he became a politician. Let me present to you Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is also a Christian, but has completely opposite views to what Mike Pence proposes. This is an example of how a person's faith can be interpreted differently by different people. Furthermore, you talked about the credibility and the reputation of certain religious leaders if they back the wrong horse, essentially. Well, that's actually untrue. Actually opposite to that, it will actually help to improve the credibility and the reputation of certain religious institutions. So many religious books have constantly stated that we must rebuke kings and leaders who propose social sin. If they rebuke, the modern way of rebuking social sin is basically by speaking up and joining politics. And if our religious leaders decide to do that, then aren't they fighting for our rights? Aren't they ensuring that all of humanity is equal? Isn't that what religious books propose? Furthermore, you talked about the inaccessibility of religious leaders and how when they become president, and the president is the most inaccessible person on the planet. Well, let me propose to you Barack Obama. He constantly showed us parts of his lives. He showed us his interactions with his daughters, with his faith, with his wife, and that made him human to us. Religious leaders actually do the same. We know religious leaders like we know our parents, like we know our family, to the point where our pastors and people who and our imams are basically our family to us. So if religious leaders were to remain in power and give us that same access and accessibility, they can not only become attainable to us, but they can also provide us with the accountability that we need from government officials. Furthermore, you talked about leaders who are indicted, like they can, religious leaders can commit crimes which will reduce the credibility of certain institutions. However, it's important to note that these kind of situations have happened before. History teaches us and we learn from it so that we don't make the same mistakes in the future. We cannot undermine the intelligence of our current people. We will not elect somebody who we know is going to mess up. If we know the credibility of our religious leaders. Furthermore, you talked about they will just promote their religion, and you mentioned the Taliban as an example. Are you aware that the Association of Muslim scholars and leaders have said that the Taliban does not represent Islamic sentiment. They have gone against everything Islam stands for, from the uneducation of women to forcing them to wear a hijab. So that whole point is completely irrelevant. And in fact, it perpetuates harmful stereotypes that Islam, the people who practice Islam, have to face all over the world. Furthermore, you mentioned about like different denominations of certain religions being pitted against each other. The Shia and Sunni Muslim issue happened back in 6 CE. We are much more advanced. We can handle those issues better. The reason why we can't solve this kind of conflict is because we haven't given them the political power necessary. We haven't given them the platform for negotiations. Instead, we just label them terrorists, which is why there's been a huge stereotype after the 9/11 situation in America. But they've never even been given political power, not to speak of actually giving them a platform to start solving their conflicts. Furthermore, you talked about in their attempts to foster unity, they will not end up doing so. However, it's a direct opposite. Whenever religious leaders are actually meant to be negotiators, take, for example, what happens in Qatar. Religious leaders are the first people to go and negotiate with whatever terrorist organizations are causing havoc, essentially. So if religious institutions were and religious leaders were given the platform in order to make... Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tanvita. Well done. Lagos, let me remind you, we are streaming this live. Facebook, Nigeria Info, 99.3. YouTube, Nigeria Info FM. Ramadan, you've got 3 minutes for round two. It starts now.
Majority of my adjudicators, these are my rebuttals. Firstly, my opponent said the morals of religious leaders will positively influence their political contributions. Now, I disagree with that by saying we've seen a lot of religious leaders who turned out to be morally debased. And we've also seen a lot of non-religious leaders who have impeccable morals. So there is no sustainable relationship between religion and morals, as popularly speculated. The second point you made was soft power. That's the issue of culture, tradition, and religion. Now, this is not always effective. I mean, religious leaders are prominently involved in Egyptian and Somalian politics, and they have no diplomacy, like you suggested in your third point, that soft power could be tools of diplomacy in religious institutions. I'm also going to use the example of Iran. According to the Freedom Index, these are the most oppressed countries, and their religious leaders are actively involved in politics. So what diplomacy are you talking about? Another point you made was they could be mobilized for terrorist interactions, and it's true that they could be mobilized for terrorist interactions, and sometimes this could be effective, but then sometimes it's also not effective. Like, they could be mobilized for terrorist interactions to sort of solve the problem, and then end up finding themselves in the midst of the old mess and then conniving with the terrorist institutions, like what happened in a lot of Islamic communities. No harm intended to people of Islamic faith. Another point you made was it creates religious tensions, and you made the point on the separation of church and state and church and saint. However, the separation of church and state does not say religious leaders should not involve in politics. It only says religious leaders should not allow their beliefs to cloud their political contributions. And even with the separation of church and state, we've seen several leaders who have allowed their religious beliefs to cloud their political contribution. So this isn't very viable. The next point you made was, because Western countries tell us to avoid religious involvement in politics, doesn't mean we should. What Western countries are you talking about? Even the USA has had religious leaders involved in their politics. So Western countries are practicing that. There's no way that they could tell us to stop it. Another point you made was on voters' education and participation, without stating any research to prove this. However, a lot of research have proven that religious leaders and institutions who are involved in politics do not have any direct correlation with voter education and participation, like the one conducted by Anatole Islam in the journal of religious contribution in politics. The next point my opponent made was the higher patriotic involvement, which is similar to the seventh point. There is no research to prove that religious leaders who have involved in politics could help to increase patriotic involvement. It's possible that some religious leaders might take up political office and they will help to improve involvement, but the example of one or two people doesn't necessarily define the entire scope of religious leaders. Another point you made was religious leaders can handle politics better. However, this is just a general speculation. We have seen some religious leaders who have handled politics, all granted, but we have also seen majority of religious leaders who have ended up being terrible politicians that end up going there to promote their religious beliefs. Another point you made was religious leaders could potentially help to handle homelessness because they have hospitable nature. Now, this is true in some cases, but then we've also seen normal non-religious leaders who are politicians that have helped to solve a lot of issues related to homelessness and destitution. Another point you made was removing religious leaders doesn't solve any problems. I've stated a lot of potential problems that religious leaders could bring into the political scope. The problem of terrorism, the problem of religious exclusion, the problem of hostility, and religious leaders have caused these problems. So instead of them to solve problems, they're actually causing problems. So why not keep them out of the political space? Those were all the points you made, and I'm happy I've been able to address all of them. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ramadan. Well done. And right on time. Lagos will take another break. When we come back from this break, it will be time for closing arguments. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. Don't go away. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. This is Nigeria Info's I Beg to Differ debate tournament for secondary school students. You're listening to the Tournament of Champions. We brought back all the champions from the four editions we've had. We brought back the runners-up as well as really impressive debaters that we have met. Today, you heard our very first semifinal match between the champion from November 2021 and the third place finisher from the March 2022 edition, Tambita Kaushik and Ramadan Olalekan. You've heard two rounds, presentation and rebuttal. It's now time for closing. They're debating that religious leaders and institutions should stay out of politics. Ramadan says yes, Tambita says no. Ramadan, you've got 3 minutes to close. Win or go home. It starts now.
Okay, in my opponent's attempt to rebut my first point, she mentioned one example of a religious leader who involved in politics that did not allow their religious beliefs to negatively influence their policy-making decisions. However, that doesn't change the fact that it is a real problem. The fact that one person went there and was different doesn't change the fact that there's a risk of religious leaders involving in politics and using that office to allowing their religious beliefs to negatively influence their policy-making decisions. Now, in my opponent's attempt to rebut my points on religious leaders could potentially endorse candidates who later promote bad policies, and this could undermine their credibility. You said, how does this one? You said it will improve their credibility without stating the reasons why it could potentially improve their credibility. I mean, if I am a religious leader and I endorse the candidate who later promotes bad policies, it is definitely going to take a toll on my credibility, and it's not going to improve my credibility in any way. In a rebuttal you tried to make on my point on accessibility, you mentioned Obama, who was very human and showed us aspects of our lives. However, the fact that he was human doesn't mean he was accessible. He couldn't go to like normal religious services anymore because of the external pressure on him as a religious leader. And then even if he goes to religious services, he has to stay in restricted areas to prevent stampede and everything. This reduces his accessibility status. Another point you tried to rebut was my point on religious leaders being indicted in corruption and that we could learn from it. Learning from it doesn't change the fact that it is a problem and an inherent risk. And you also said we wouldn't elect people who potentially mess up. I mean, no politician is going to come to you and during his campaign tell you, hello, I am going to mess up. But then they will all come as wolves in sheep's clothing, and then when they enter into political office, that is when they strike. And by that time, it's too late, and we have to wait for another 4 years, like in our democratic system. Another point you made was Talibans have been denounced as Islamic. And that doesn't change the fact that these Talibans were once religious leaders, but then it was after their issues of extremism and hostility, that was when the Islamic community denounced them. It doesn't change the fact that the risk came from the fact that they were once religious leaders, and they decided to like promote that concept of extremism. Another point you made was that we haven't given religious leaders political power while trying to rebut my point. Now, a lot of countries have a lot of religious leaders who are involved in politics. USA, Iran, Somalia, Egypt. So which countries are you talking about that haven't given religious leaders political power? I mean, even in our country, Yemi Osinbajo was a vice president. He was a religious leader. So we have given them the opportunity to prove their worth, and they have not done that simply. Another point you made was religious leaders could interact with terrorist organizations while trying to rebut my point on unity and harmony. Like I've said earlier, the fact that they interact with terrorist organizations most of the times might not work. It works sometimes. I'm not disputing that fact. But then most of the times this doesn't work. And then if like religious leaders are interacting with the terrorist organization, especially the Islamic community, and I repeat, no harm to people of the Islamic religion, they might see that this terrorist could potentially help them to promote that issue of extremism, if that is what they have in mind, and then this could be counterproductive. So instead of solving the problem of unity, they are creating more problems relating to unity. Those are the points you try to rebut, but then I'm going to make some more points in my favor. The fact that religious leaders are going to be involved in politics is going to create some form of religious tension, because then everybody is going to struggle for religious reputation. I don't want a Christian to be in politics because I am a Muslim. I don't want a Muslim to be in politics because I am a Buddhist. And this could lead to a struggle for religious representation. And then the political space is left in an absolute mishmash. Another point I would like to make is it leads to a potential clash of religious ideologies. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ramadan Oladipupo Olalekan. Closing. In this semi-final match in the Tournament of Champions, I'm Sandra Ezekwesili, your moderator. Tambita, your 3 minutes to close starts now. Win or go home.
Thank you. So one of the points that the opposition tried to make was that there's no link between morals and the religious leaders of our time. Well, and you said that I kept on, that I was trying to define an entire scope without, while just mentioning one or two people. And I'm not going to mention one or two people. I'm going to mention five. Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Desmond Tutu, Nelson Mandela, Vivekananda. These people are religious leaders who participated in politics, advocated for the human rights of all people, even those who were against their religion, and still managed to gain independence for various countries and from various civil rights organizations. Furthermore, you mentioned diplomacy and how, like Saudi Arabia and Iran, they are highly theocratic and therefore they'll not be able to have diplomatic relations. However, that's untrue. Saudi Arabia has several diplomatic relations, as does Iran. And if their regime's really as oppressive as you were trying to make out, how come Iran has a 38.7% immigrant rate? Why would people voluntarily come to their country if they knew that they were going to be oppressed there? Why are people searching for jobs and economic opportunities in a country that they'd be inevitably oppressed by, if, as you so eloquently put it? Furthermore, you mentioned that they could connive with terrorists, like religious leaders when trying to negotiate. Highly unlikely. We are in the generation of globalization. Our generation, Generation Z, is known for being political and powerful. We can, it's very easy to find patterns between religious leaders who are trying to work with terrorists. And all we need to do is just post that and it will go viral, immediately leading to the impeachment. This was seen with Donald Trump. He was impeached twice and arrested once, which happened like last week. Furthermore, you talked about religious beliefs clouding judgment. That's what we want. We want like their morals. We want that morality and those ethical values to play a part. Countries like Russia and China, which are atheists, which do not have religious infliction, they do not allow for religious leaders, they are having such human rights violations in their countries. And it's because of this lack of morals, this lack of empathy with their people. Furthermore, you asked which countries I was referring to when I was talking about a lack of political participation. Sweden, Norway, Finland, China, Russia. The list goes on and on. These religious leaders are highly intelligent people. They have commanded a fan following. They have commanded people based on what they speak. Isn't that the job of a politician? Isn't that what they do? So why are we barring these highly intelligent individuals from joining politics on the basis of their religious affiliations? Furthermore, you mentioned that there was no direct connection between voter turnout and religious leaders. And you said I gave no statistics. That is incorrect. I gave statistics of Brazil and Israel, highly religious countries, and their voter turnout, 79% and 68% respectively. I'll repeat it if you didn't hear it the first time. Furthermore, talking about no examples or no statistics, when I mentioned my point about homelessness, you said that there were alternatives to religious institutions. You never gave me an example of any organization that works towards homelessness. Furthermore, you talked, you said that there's that if they're just causing problems, they should stay out of the political sphere. We're not solving the problem, we're just procrastinating it for later. Eventually, these problems are going to come back bite us just because we decide to save it for later. Yes, I understand that every country has something that they're trying to address now, especially with COVID on the run. But if these problems are not addressed, if we not allow these kind of people intervention with politics, then what's going to happen in the future is just going to bounce back and hit us much harder than we'd ever expected. Now, furthermore, you mentioned that, you said that you didn't get my point about improving their credibility. I said that the aim of a religious institution based on the books that they follow is that they are meant to challenge authority when authority is committing sin. In that case, wouldn't it make sense for, if there's a politician who's causing riots, wouldn't it make sense for religious leaders to step in and try to change the system? Isn't that what they're meant to do? Isn't that what they promised us, their followers? Furthermore, you mentioned that when I mentioned my point about Obama, he wasn't allowed to enter like normal religious services because of all the security. Obviously, he's a president. Presidents have been assassinated, but obviously there's going to be security. But he still was able to connect with the people. He had several ways of meeting young children, of meeting adults, not only in terms of... Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tanvita Kaushik, and well done, Lagos. I hope you've been watching. Woo! I hate that the debate is over. I want to give them 5 more minutes to, you know, just share a few more points. Again, the judges are judging based on number, quality, originality of unique points made, clarity of thought, and eloquence of presentation. Clarity of thought does not mean whether you in the audience can hear the debaters clearly. Clarity of thought means that the debaters are able to show that they have thought very clearly about what they are debating, that they understand the topic, and they are able to talk about the topic in a way that communicates to us, the listeners, the judges, that they understood the topic. That's what clarity of thought means. The ability to think clearly or understand things clearly. Eloquence of presentation. So one thing is to think about the topic, show us you understand it, and then present it eloquently. These are the things that the judges are judging for. The number of opponents' points addressed, the strength of your rebuttal of each point. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll see if the results are ready. We'll see if this... if there's a tie or if there's a clear winner. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili, Lagos. This has been quite the debate. This has been quite the debate. My God. All right, let's take a look at the results. I have them here. And I can tell you that there is no tie. In the presentation round, Ramadan scored 106. Tanvita scored 98. For presentation style, Ramadan and Tanvita tie at 37. In the rebuttal round, Ramadan scored 66. Tanvita scored 78. For rebuttal style, Ramadan scored 34. Tanvita scored 31. In the closing round, Ramadan scored 81. Tanvita scored 77. For closing style, Ramadan and Tanvita tie at 30. And so, with a total of 354 to 351, Ramadan Olaleko Oladipupo wins this debate.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations to you, Ramadan, and well done. You just broke Tanvita's streak, the undefeated one. Tanvita Kaushik, well done. You have been an amazing delight to watch since this tournament began. You have done amazing, phenomenal things every time that we have seen you here. So congratulations to you and well done. You did so well. Like I say to all the debaters whose journeys are cut short, there's over 1,000 people who have tried to get on this tournament. Less than 80 got on. And for the Tournament of Champions, we had 12 people. We had 8 get to the quarterfinals, and you were in the top 4 for the semifinals. Well done to you. 3 points. You were taken down by 3 points, Tanvita. That's a big deal. I'm so proud of you. I cannot wait to see what you do tomorrow in the future. But congratulations to you and well done. Great work. Ramadan, we'll see you in the finals on Monday at 4. We'll send you the topic by the time who you'll face tomorrow emerges. All right, are you going to cry, Ramadan? Are you going to cry?
No, you're not?
Okay, all right. Thug tears? No thug tears? No? Okay. All right, you both can leave the studio. Thank you very much for your time, Lagos. Let's talk.